this magnificent series on the sacred feminine. we're starting with Mary Magdalene. Now, why start a series of 8 podcasts on sacred feminine with her? Because this is about when the sacred feminine lost its foothold and balance in the world. So I think it's important to start where things got out of whack a little bit. And so other pagan religions and other religions around the world all equally favor male and female counterpart, except in Christianity. There, we will see through Sophia, one of the other podcasts, that there was a recognized sacred feminine, but it got lost. And mostly because the story that was weaved around Mary Magdalene. So I figured it was a good place to start and explain the importance of the sacred feminine and how we can restore that balance in our lives. What's important is that we need to understand that everything in throughout creation is a balance between yin and yang, between male or female. And so therefore, we need to have this own balance in our own life. If you have any questions, as usual, you can post them online and I will reply to them probably at the end of the podcast like I usually do, unless something is not clear. So, who is Mary Magdalene? Sometimes referred to as the Magdalene, she was a woman who, according to 4 canonical gospel of the Bible of the Christian, traveled with Jesus as one of her followers. And she was there as a witness to his crucifixion. And she was also there when he was resurrected. She is mentioned by name 12 times in the Gospels, which is more than the Apostles. So right there, it tells us that she played a very important role in the life of Jesus. And she couldn't be erased completely. Now, she's also named more than his own family. We know that Jesus had a sister and we don't even know what her name was. So the name that she was given, the Magdalene, some writer will say that it's because she's from a fishing town, the western shore of the Sea of Galilee. But other research also says that that's how Jesus called her, the Magdalene. And the translation to that is, it's a representation of how, the light and the power that she was. And so we'll go into this tonight to explain why she was the light and what was her real importance and what role did she actually play and what does she have to teach us, more importantly. So in the New Testament, in the Gospel of Luke 8-23, Mary Magdalene was one of the women that traveled with Jesus and helped support his ministry. By that, some people say that it was financial support, indicating that she was relatively healthy. However, we're going to also find, like many of the messages in the Bible, there's more than one meaning towards an explanation that is given. And one of those meaning is she literally supported Jesus with energy and teachings. The same passage also states that 7 demons had been driven out of her, a statement which is repeated in the longer ending of Mark. And so Mary Magdalene, was she really haunted by 7 demons? Not really. And we will find out at the end of today what were those 7 demons and what role did they actually play. Interestingly enough, in a lot of the more, not the loosely translated Bible, but the more word-for-word translated Bible, because there's many, many sources. There's Hebrew sources, there's Greek sources, and so if we go back and do quite a bit of research, you will find Jesus often saying, for those who have eyes and see, and for those who have ears can hear, meaning that you can do something and understand something in a superficial manner. And then if you dig deeper, you can understand the deeper meaning of the message that is given. One of the things that I often tell my students and you listeners is if you watch something or read a book, you can just read it for the pleasure of reading it. But then if you actually take the time to understand what is being said, why was it so important for someone to actually write a novel about something? What is the message behind it? And that is the key here. So Mary Magdalene traveled with a larger group of women, which included Jesus' mother, Mary, and she was one of the first witnesses at the empty tomb, and the first person, or in some cases, depending on the references, the only person to whom Jesus appeared for the first time. So it's undeniable that she was important. She was there at all the important events in Jesus' life, and she can be found elsewhere. She can be found in the Gnostic Christian writings. She can find, those writings include the Dialogues of the Savior, the Pistis Sophia, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, and the Gospel of Mary. Those Gospels are not included in the Bible. We'll talk about that. However, they're recognized in some areas of the world as Gospel. And she is portrayed in there as an apostle, not just a follower. And she was the closest and most beloved disciple, and often referred to as the one who truly understood his teachings. Now we're going to understand why today. Finally, the truth will be exposed. So who was Mary? Because it's important to understand that if she was this close to Jesus, and understood the lesson that Jesus taught. And Jesus didn't just teach of matters of the material world. He tried and tried to explain to us not to focus on money, not to focus on materialistic things. But the finer points of his teaching, the matters of the soul and the matters of enlightenment, those were teachings that Mary understood quite well. And for that, we kind of need to look at the missing years of the life of Jesus, because the two are completely intertwined. Mary Magdalene was born of an Egyptian mother and a Mesopotamian father, And so at 12, she studied with the secret sisterhood of the initiate of Isis. She met Jesus once she had completed all of her initiations. In the book of the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ by Levi, Jesus is described between the age of 12 to 30, when he started this ministry and preaching, as traveling on the ships of his uncle, a rich merchant that did business with the Romans. And he visited in some areas, he visited India, Tibet, Persia, Assyria, Greece, and Egypt. So this book tells us that Jesus did travel. So he didn't just disappear out of nowhere, all of a sudden reappeared and he was a teacher. Before you can be a teacher, you need to be a student. And before you can teach, you need to understand what you're teaching. Otherwise, you can't explain when people have questions. And one of the things that was fabulous about Jesus is that his way of teaching was to teach by giving us similarity in stories and parables, which for some people, the level of their understanding was the material world. And some people were able to dig further into the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual learnings that were to be had with those parables. Now, he met Mary in Egypt, and by then he had studied the Tao, the Zarathustra, he studied about Buddhism, and he also studied with the Essenes in the desert. So he was very well versed in the mystery school, which was also the case for Mary Magdalene. She was a high priestess of Egypt. She was very well versed in the sacred feminine, and she was the priestess of the sacred fire. Why is this important? Because as a priestess, she had studied for many years, and she understood the spiritual vocation that she had to held as a woman. She was to hold the sacred feminine while Jesus was holding the male energy. It is written that she recognized Jesus as her twin flame immediately when she looked into his eyes, and she understood that her role was to be by his side as they worked together to help others around them to learn those mysteries of the universe and the spiritual world. One of the greatest gifts that Jesus tried to bring to the world was to get the information from the mystery schools into mainstream and allow people, like slaves, poor people, people who can read, and also what's referred to as the Gentiles, which means those who were not Hebrews, to have access to this information. And Mary Magdalene understood that her role was to support him in this, in order to the mysteries to no longer be mysteries. They both understood, but as they worked together, so we can't really speak of Mary Magdalene without speaking of Jesus. They were intertwined together. As twin flames, their soul's purpose were united in the same purpose. And so it was to bring us the knowledge so that we could further our own spiritual advancement and enlightenment into reaching a level that would allow us to be at peace and of service to the world. Jesus' role was to bring knowledge, understanding, and practice to everyone. Mary Magdalene's role is, unfortunately, has been lost in through the writings that we have access to her. Luckily, more documents were found, and her own Gospels was found, and then we can see how intelligent, brilliant, and compassionate she was. And we can learn from her and from her experience. And this is the reason why we're sharing this tonight. She was a teacher in her own right, meaning that as the apostles listened to Jesus, they also listened to Mary. And because Mary understood what Jesus was explaining, oftentimes she would support his teaching and would help him. It's not reflected in our common Bible, but it is the role that she held. So she wasn't like a maid or a servant or anything like that. She was a spiritual holder of the divine feminine at that time on the planet. She worked closely hand in hand with Mary, the mother of Jesus, who also was a high priestess in the temple of Isis. They played different role. Mary, the mother, her role was to be the incarnation of the divine in motherhood, as opposed to Mary Magdalene as a high priestess. Her role was to support and to lean a hand in the teachings. Now, a lot of people are like, okay, so if we're delving into what we don't know about Mary Magdalene, was she married to Jesus? Because there's some reports that say that the wedding in Cana was actually the marriage of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Now, and it said that not only were they married, they also had a daughter named Sarah, which was born after Jesus was crucified. But what's interesting is that their marriage and relationship was kept secret from absolutely everyone. So I don't know if someone else got married at Cana and they got married and so the celebration was that, but the relationship that the two of them had was kept very, very private, and became harder and harder to keep this relationship because Jesus was in such high demand and always surrounded by a lot of people and went to places where women at the time were not welcome. And so for those reasons, they often were separated. But after the crucifixion, Mary Magdalene then escaped because it was no longer safe for her. And she actually traveled to Europe and got the help from the Druids, who helped her relocate through England by passing through Tor and Glastonbury. There is, between Glastonbury and Tor, which are quite closely physically located, there is a well. And Mary Magdalene is known to be a well of energy and a well of healing. And so she's often found in her travels to be close to water or wells inside caves and things like that. To this day, this well has been preserved, especially the one in England, and several in France. And it is said that if you were to bathe in those waters, you will heal. So, out of all this, the importance of were they married or not doesn't matter. They were united in their goals and working together into bringing the teachings, spiritual teachings, to help us. Now, that being said, where does the prostitute come from? The portrayal of Mary Magdalene as a prostitute arises from a series of Easter sermons delivered in 591. So we're talking 1,500 years ago. So for almost 600 years, Mary Magdalene was not considered a prostitute. However, Pope Gregory I decided to introduce Mary of Bethany, the unnamed and the unnamed sinful woman who anoints Jesus' feet and dries his feet with her hair, as Mary Magdalene. And so this resulted in a widespread belief that she was a repentant prostitute or a promiscuous woman. However, that was eventually challenged. And this is not something that is known by a lot of people, but the identification of Mary Magdalene with Mary of Bethany and the unknown, unnamed sinful woman was a major controversy, which led up to the Reformation and some of the Protestants rejecting it. In 1969, the identification of Mary Magdalene with Mary of Bethany and the unnamed sinful woman was removed from the general Roman calendar by Pope Paul VI. So the view that she was a prostitute should have been removed. However, in popular culture, the belief continued, because it's not because the one at the top says something that trickling down, everybody agreed. And as they preach in their own churches or areas, some of them continue to teach that she was a prostitute. And this is why this controversy has lasted to this day. Now, in 2016, Pope Francis raised the level of the liturgical memory on July 22nd from a memorial to a feast, for her to be referred as the Apostles of Apostles. So now we're having the church retracting themselves and going back to what she really was, the Apostle of the Apostles. And so for those of you who have seen the painting of Da Vinci of the Last Dinner, where it was supposed in the Da Vinci Code and things like that, that it was Jesus and it was Mary Magdalene, it could very well be. She would have been the 13th disciples. So why is there so much secrecy around Mary Magdalene? Why don't we have the Gospel of Mary included in the Bible? Why is it so hard to find anything about her? The Bible used to contain many more texts, some of a few I named before. And the New Testament, which mostly concentrates on the ministry of Jesus, which is the 3 years that he taught, recounts his life, but was not written at the time. You know, so they didn't have the technology that we have today. The minute someone makes a saying or someone makes a song, and you can trace their beginnings all the way back and through social media. However, at the time of Jesus, people just at first thought he was just a very nice guy preaching on a mountain. And who was he anyway? So they didn't start realizing the importance of his teaching. So they didn't write everything down right away. Most of it was written later. And so that's why there's conflicting timelines, conflicting traveling, although the stories are being recollected. Not everybody has been recollected in the same order. Now, there's more than just the four disciples who wrote the story of Jesus. Judas, the book of Judas, was found in Egypt in the 1970s. And it's been dated around 200 AD, which means 280 years after death of Jesus. And so this is obviously a reproduction, but it still dates to very closely to the time where the manuscript would have been copied and shared with other people. This particular book of Judas contains secret conversation between Jesus and the betrayer, as we know, Judas Iscariot. However, Jesus understood that the soul's work is different than your own personal desire of living in a material world. And he knew that for his work to be accomplished, he needed to be betrayed. So, contrary to what we may think, just like Mary Magdalene, Judas was not his worst enemy. He was the one who loved him the most, and the one that he was most entrusted with this difficult and arduous task. Now, these books have disappeared because there was many steps to this. But in February 24, 303, so we're talking several years after the dated Judas Iscariot gospel, there was an order to destroy all the scriptures and all liturgical books across the Roman Empire. And this explains why some books were found hidden in jars inside caves like the Dead Sea Scrolls. There's 11 caves containing different scrolls. There was a lot of scrolls. So there's a lot of things that were planned to destroy certain books. However, these books were hidden and survived. Now, who decided to include which book and make it the Bible? The first four centuries, so the first 400 years and beyond, different church leaders and theologians made argument as to which book should be included and which one should be not. And some should be classified as heretics. Now, these books were deemed the books that were deemed authentic and authoritative by the community were usually used by the community, which is why some of these books survived the destruction. However, the bulk of the editing of which books should be in the Bible kind of ended in the late 300s, so almost 400. But the debate on some of those books lasted until the 16th century. So when Martin Luther King decided to publish his German translation of the Bible. It is because of individuals like that, that some of these gospels are been able to be found. The Gospel of Mary, however, was very well hidden. The first copy of the Gospel of Mary was found around 1896. And the paper it's written on is considered to be 400 and something, so 5th century. So it's very, very old, but it was discovered in 1896. The Gospel of Mary was written after Jesus reappeared in his body of light to the disciple. That's when it was written. For her, we can see exactly when it happened because she describes those specific events, and then she left the area to travel to Europe and England. So it was written before her departure. There's two other fragments. Now, this is what's interesting. If you find just one, you can say, is it really something that we should trust? Is it really something that we should believe, that there's something in circulation about the Gospel of Mary at the time? But two other fragments of the Gospel of Mary have been discovered since. They were discovered sometime between 1897 and 1906. So now we have three different copies of this Gospel of Mary in existence. Some of them, unfortunately, were very much damaged. So, but between the three, they were able to put most of what was written together. And that's the other advantage of having more than one copy. If the first section is destroyed, maybe the other one has the sections that we were missing. And we're able to compile the Gospel of Mary. Then, of course, comes the discussion of which Mary wrote it, because there were so many Marys, even in the stories related by the apostles. And it was not like it was lying Mary Magdalene. However, if we argue that Mary Magdalene was there at all the important events in Jesus Christ's life, and that the animosity that is described in the gospel between her and Peter, one of the apostles, makes her more likely the one that actually wrote this gospel. Jason Coombs, an assistant professor at Brigham Young University, who specializes in ancient Christianity, also says that the texts reflect the theology and the doctrinal debate going on in the early church, as such as the role of women in the church, and feels that not only was it written by Mary Magdalene and refers to Mary Magdalene, but also confirms that she was perhaps his favorite one, his favorite apostles. Now, Karen King explains to us one of the reasons why the Gospel of Mary might have been omitted and kept out of circulation for a very long time. Because it presents a radical interpretation of Jesus' teaching as both a path to inner spiritual knowledge. Now, this is very important. Mary decides to try to be more direct in her teaching and explain that part of the teachings that Jesus is giving to the crowds is about your inner spiritual knowledge. So it took away power from the church, you see, because the journey that we're instructed to follow and to be guided through is something of a personal nature, something that each individual must do on their own. And so no one can save you, no one can come and say prayers for you. You're the one who has to have the gratitude, you're the one who has to forgive, you're the one who has to do the work. Therefore, it rejects the fact that Jesus suffered on the death for us, to open us the way. It is true that because he came and because he shared his knowledge with us, he instructed us in a way that we were going to be able to follow him, so follow his light. But his suffering and his death have more to do with the karma he had accumulated with previous lives than having to have to die. But what he needed to die for was to clear the balance of the karma he owed. And he understood all those things. He just never actually had the chance to teach himself all of those things, but he understood these things. The foundation of Edgar Cayce in Virginia, in the United States, agrees through the Akashic Record and Edgar Cayce's readings that they can form a lineage of the different past life that Jesus had up to the point where he was Jesus. And so there was karma indeed, and karma he needed to clear in order to become an ascended master. Now, it presents a very straightforward and convincing argument that the church belonged to men and women. Again, very controversial because the church didn't want that to happen. So rather than sharing the power, they decided to take it away. So removing the Gospel of Mary was important. Removing it out of circulation so that without it, there was no support for that anymore. It's the Gospel of Mary is critique for the illegitimate power and the spiritual perfection. The idea is that we must strive to do better each day. One day after another, we must be able to do our best, to the best of our ability. So there's no perfection until you've reached this level of perfection. But it's a daily ritual of a daily practice that is being taught in the Gospel of Mary. And also, in a way, it challenges the idea that everybody got along and everybody was friendly. But I think that for those of you who actually read the Bible and the New Testament and what happens in the early Christian years, we realize there's a lot of strife, there's a lot of arguments. I don't see who would have thought that this was harmonious. It was a revolution in its own right, and it was not calm, it wasn't quiet, and then not everybody agreed because they lost their leader. So without their leader, everybody tried to take a piece of the cake, and so it got messy. So, therefore, does it make sense to remove the Gospel of Mary and try to eradicate it and make it non-existent? Yes, absolutely. Because now we're talking about karma, reincarnation. We're talking about the legitimacy of the woman's leadership. So, just for those things alone, it makes a lot of sense. What supports... Now, this is important. We now, in this day, in 2021, we even know that there are Orthodox Eastern monasteries that support that path to the inner spiritual knowledge. Because they were so remote from Rome and pretty much self-sustaining and didn't depend on contributions from the empire, they really didn't have to follow the orders. And so they saved a lot of the manuscript, and the manuscript have been tediously rewritten and now made public. And it speaks of that inner spiritual path that each and every one of us can follow. So it supports the Gospel of Mary. Ah, so what is she teaching? There's two parts to the teaching. The first part starts off with Jesus teaching about love. And this is very important. If you're new to the Christianity, or if you think you know Christianity, you have the teaching of the Master, which was Jesus. And then you have what everybody else for centuries decided should be done, and how it should be done, and how much it should cost, and how long it should take. And none of Jesus' teaching have anything to do with that. There is, Jesus never entered buildings to teach. He always taught outside. Jesus never said to us that we had to give back to the government what the government owned, and we had to give back the spiritual world what belongs to the spiritual world, which was our meditation, our prayers, and our compassion, and our love. This was his true teaching. And so once again, he reappears before the disciples after the crucifixion, which creates a state of panic and chaos, because they're like, okay, the guy was dead, now he's back here. But he tells them that they need to reach a higher consciousness level, which is recognized in the Buddhist tradition. They have to understand that if I suffer, then you're suffering. Because until all suffering is ended, we can't find joy and peace and happiness. Because someone else is still in pain and someone else is still hurting. And so true love and compassion, we need to reach out to each other and become a community and support each other and become one, which is a much higher level of consciousness than most of us operate at. And he's trying to explain that we're all one. We're all tied. We all have links to each other. But he's also talking about a soul level. At a soul level, we are one. During our existence on Earth, while we're inside of the human body, we become a drop of water. And once we shed our body with the death of this body, the soul continues to live, and it becomes more than just a drop in the ocean. It becomes the ocean itself. And it's as you're working through your level of consciousness, then you realize after this reunification from the drop of water with the ocean, and you realize you are still a drop of water, but now you're moving together as one, as the ocean. Not one is more important than the other. It is impossible for us to find the one drop of the ocean that's going to cause what? It's a powerful force that works as one. And so we all have the same goal, we all have the same unity. And this is what he was trying to teach the disciples. And then he explains that there is no good nor bad, that we make it good or bad. So we'll take, and I've talked about this before, but since it's part of the actual teaching in the Gospel of Mary, I'm going to go again into this. Money is money. If you use it to bribe someone, then it becomes bad. However, if you buy food with it, or if you pay your utility bills with it, then it brings warmth to your family, or it brings food to the table, then it is good. So money in itself is not good or bad. It's always our intent in using something or doing something that makes it good or bad. And so he was trying to explain that everything in nature, everything surrounding us is neutral from a standpoint. Like a chair, everybody would think if I ask, so do you think the chair is good or bad? And people would say, well, it's a chair, so good. But if the chair is used to hurt someone and is broken on someone's back, or used to pull a prank as you pull the chair, someone sits down and they hurt themselves, then the chair their chair becomes bad. And so we have to take every single thing like this that we're calling it bad or good and examine why are we giving it these meanings. And I'm thinking about, I have this beautiful background behind me of of snow and trees. You know, people complain about the cold, but when it's hot, then they complain about the heat. They're complaining about the extremes of these weathers and how these weathers are making them feel. But the cold is just a degree of temperature. It's neither good nor bad. It's just not very comfortable if you don't have winter boots, if you don't have a jacket, and if you're stuck outside, or if you have shelter. So we need to stop. One of the teaching is we need to stop always trying to qualify things as good or bad, and put them back into a neutral place. A place of, it is simply is, to simply be. Which, by extension, he's trying to tell us, you as a person need to become neutral. You cannot attribute yourself qualities of good and bad. You need to become neutral. You need to just be. And you need to be with the intention. Instead of furthering your own personal intention along, you need to go again, along with God's will, which is where you become the drop of water into the ocean and move as one. And so if we take aside wanting to get richer, wanting to get more popular, wanting to whatever, if we push those things aside and we ask ourselves, what good can I do for this community? Then we become more of a witness, seeing the need and fulfilling this need. Now, the second part of the teaching that Jesus leaves us with before he disappears is he said, do not be led astray by others. I have a lot of people who tell me, I must have read thousands of books, and I've had some people come to me and say, aren't you afraid that your faith is going to get shattered or broken down? And what I can say is that because I am strong in my faith, I'm not afraid to read more and discover more, and then try to take what I'm reading for what it's worth. And so I don't take everything as the truth, but if I have several different references that tell me the same thing, then I'm more inclined to believe that perhaps indeed what is being said here is as a semblance of truth. He tells them not to lay rules beyond what he's taught them, which is very funny as far as I'm concerned, because that's exactly what they did. The minute he left, they started laying rules. But he says those rules are a constraint. And this being a personal spiritual path, then you have to let everyone travel at their own pace. You have to let everyone be able to evolve as fast as they can, but no faster than that. And so he leaves the disciples. He's made of light, so he just disappears. And the disciples are distraught because they're losing their master, they're losing their leader, they're alone. But Mary Magdalene is present and comforts them. And interestingly enough, Peter asks her to tell them what she knows that the master only taught her. And so this is an opportunity for her. This is how she is recognized. I mean, as Jesus disappears, they're turning to Mary Magdalene and they're asking her to be the teacher. So the Gospel of Mary disappeared because all of a sudden we need to listen to a woman. You understand? And she teaches them in a more advanced level. And they are something they're not used to. And the things that she talks about is the ascension of the soul. Peter questions why would the Savior reveal such thing to a woman and keep that from the male disciples? And Andrew says the teaching are strange. Now that means that this is something new to them. And she's bringing it forward now because Jesus is no longer around, and she feels that perhaps they were ready to hear what she had to teach. And Levi is the one who stops them and says Jesus loved her more than any other disciples. And so we, as a group, should do what Jesus says and go and instruct the gospel. This confrontation is described not just in the Gospel of Mary, but the Gospel of Thomas and the Gospel of the Egyptian, and in also Pistis Sophia. So this confrontation, this disagreement, is not just Mary being stubborn or, you know, being vindicative against the man. It's something that took place and created enough debate to be written in several different areas. So, Mary's role was to help support Jesus in his work. And I can tell you from experience, they cannot be two figureheads. There has to be one, and it's the other one provides support. She firmly believed, as a priestess of Egypt, that there was one God, and we were one with God in all things. We were all linked through the brotherhood of life. So it's not a specific brotherhood that wore specific robes and went around in secret meetings. We are all brothers and sisters. That's the brotherhood of life. And so as we walk this path, if we make this path easier for everyone, everyone can walk faster and get there sooner. But we have to work together for that. At this point, she starts talking about the soul. She's trying to explain that the human body is nothing but a garment. It's nothing but a piece of clothing. And we shed this piece of clothing, and then we're just soul. We're just not a soul inside of a garment of a human body. The soul lives on. And that's why Jesus can reappear as a light being, because he's not really gone. But what he's doing, other beings could do if they reached an ascended state of enlightenment. This is why Jesus went through the crucifixion and everything else that happened during the passion, as it calls, to clear his karma so that he could do this and show the people it can be done. But before it can be done, your karma must be clear out of the way. I don't know if, in order to be heard, she needed to say that the teaching came from Jesus and she's just relating these teachings, or she knew just as well as Jesus that these teachings were true. But she explains that in a vision, she had a vision, and Jesus explains to her that visions come from a place between the soul and the spirit. Now, the soul is like that drop of water. It's who you are. The soul guides you and your thoughts and your action when you're not in a human body or when you're in a human body. The spirit is the link between the soul and God or creator or the source, whatever you want to call it. And the place in between would be the nous. It's a Greek term that represents like the mental body or the mind. And so she says this vision comes from in between those places. So it comes from between the connection of God to me and who I am. So it's not my idea, but it's some form of guidance that is given to me. So therefore, if you're having visions while you're meditating or you're dreaming, she explains you're being guided in this state that is between the awake and the fallen asleep. Because we are soul, she goes on to explain that one of the most important things that we must do is overcome the seven demons. Now remember, at the beginning of this talk, I explained that in the Bible it states that seven demons were chased out of Mary Magdalene. These are now part of, and this is probably where they get it from, came from the Gospel of Mary. And she explains what those seven demons are. They weren't actual demons. They weren't, she wasn't possessed or anything. On the contrary, it's the battle between the human and the soul, and the soul overtaking the human experience and making it a spiritual experience. So therefore, the first thing that must be done is to learn to overcome matter. The soul's most important lesson as it comes on earth, as we get disconnected from Creator, is to reconnect Creator. Long, long time ago, now please go see Atlantis in Lemuria podcast and things, but there were a time where we weren't so dissociated. However, the temptation of the physical body became an overwhelming attraction, because the denser we got, the more we felt. We felt the cold, we felt the sugar rush, we felt the different tastes in our mouth, and we had, amongst all other things, sexual desires that were more fulfilled with a denser body. But as our body got denser and denser, we lost the connection with Creator and the Source. And so we need to retrack our steps now, which is always a shame, but we need to get back to this place where we can be connected with Creator while in a human form. And so in order to affect real change for our soul's goals, the other reasons why we came here, and intention, we need to free ourselves from our passions. We cannot be slaves to the human body. The human body is nothing but a garment. So if you don't like your garment, you should change it, right? So as we do in the summer days, you know, if any of you have traveled, it's really, really hot during the day and at night, even though it's not technically cold, because it was so hot during the day, the change in temperature will put a sweater on to be comfortable. We need to be able, if we can change those garments, as we recognize, oh, I'm cold, I need warm, or I'm hot, I need to take layers off. We need to be at the same level with our soul. If our soul needs more meditation, if our soul needs more prayer, if our soul needs more food, then we need to feed the soul. We need to protect the soul. The soul should be our main and primary concern. One of the things that's lovely is that she, Mary Magdalene, indicates that should we be losing our courage and losing the battle to our, and become slaves to our passion, that we should reach out to nature and take heart in the beauty and the harmony of divine nature. So even if it's a walk in nature, if you go camping, if you go for a hike, but spending time in quiet, in silence, and then again, the understatement is alone and quiet, right? Retracting ourselves from all temptations, finding our base level, and then trying again. So there's nothing about being perfect all the time. There's nothing about not making any mistakes. It's about every day courageously trying to be this detachment from our physical body and more witness to what our soul needs and our soul wants, and providing that for our souls. Now, there's four main elements of attachment. But like I said, there's some bits and pages missing, and I find that the four elements are really the seven elements, but it's iffy here, and unfortunately I can't really clarify that for you, because of the three Gospel of Mary that were found, there's bits missing, right? So however, I understand the seven demons, and so I will explain them that way. What's interesting is that the teaching in the Gospel of Mary go along with the teachings of Buddha that all form of attachment cause suffering. And here, in the Gospel of Mary, Mary encourages us to release our attachment. Now, what's beautiful, what I found frustrating, is when I was trying to explain attachment and releasing attachment from a Buddhist point of view, it's a little bit more complicated because there's not a real step to it. However, the Gospel of Mary is fantastic. It's so clear and it's so easy to follow that it shows to me that she was a fabulous teacher, because she lays out the step for you. So The first thing that you have to release is your fear of what's binding your soul. And then what's binding, which means holding it back, what's enveloping the soul, which relates to the material world, and the emotions, the desires, the emotional attachment, which determine us and limit us, and then ignorance. Now, if you think about this, in 2021 Sonia Roy's words, this would mean that what binds the soul is spiritual fear, what envelops the soul is the material, so material fears, the desire and emotional is the emotional body, and the ignorance is the mental body. So we're back to the four bodies. We have to be able to free ourselves of the attachment of these different bodies. What does that mean? Well, that means we need to heal our spiritual wounds, we need to heal our emotional wounds, we need to heal our mental wounds, and we need to take back the control over this body so that it no longer controls us. And that way we can move forward in the forward direction and up, right? Okay. Now, the ascending of the soul starts first with releasing from matter. You must dissociate the soul from the body. You must recognize that you are a spiritual body. That is who you are. You are the soul. You're not the short and fat in this life and the tall and slim in the other life. And you're not a woman in this life. That doesn't matter that you're a man or a woman or anything in between. It doesn't matter if you're tall or you're short, or if you're skinny, if you got hair, if you don't. None of those things matter. What matters is that you need to get past this physical limitation, because there was a real limitation, I'll grant you that. There was a time where if a baby was born and was at Down syndrome, or they were handicapped, or they were missing a limb, or they weren't perfectly shaped, they were put away in asylums and drugged until they died. There was a real true limitation then. And I'm not saying that people who have handicaps today are not facing debilitating conditions or a difficulty in the world. However, part of the soul's lesson is to overcome those physical limitations. And one of those biggest limitations that we have is the way we judge our own selves. I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm sick, I'm whatever excuses we found, and we blame it on our physical body. And so we need to be able to separate ourselves from that and asking ourselves, what is the message I'm supposed to get from this? So therefore, you have a body. This body was created by you and your architect, your body elemental. And you've decided to give yourself the body you have now. You gave yourself this physical form because your soul felt that through this physical form is the best way that they could learn the lessons they came here to learn. The lessons vary from one person to the other. But in the end, we have to let go of the way we judge ourselves, the way we hate ourselves instead of loving ourselves. One of the biggest lessons that Jesus tells us is to love ourselves. And Mary says we need to love everyone, and we are part of this everyone. We need to love us. We need to show compassion towards us. We also have to include ourselves in this group. Why is this so important? Because the soul is perfect. And because the soul is perfect, we can't learn in the state of a soul. Of course we love ourselves, we're perfect. So we need to come having this human experience to learn to love ourselves with all these imperfections. And I have met some beautiful men and women in my life. Really beautiful. And interestingly enough, they don't think they are. And yet when I look at them, I try to explain to them, this is what I see. Is it not what you see when you look in the mirror? And they don't. They don't see what I see. They just think I'm being nice. They just think that I'm very, very kind. but they're not really that pretty. And so that tells me that we still have a very long road ahead in this very first step that Mary teaches us about detaching ourself, which is the soul, from this physical envelope. One of the things that can help feed the soul through your physical body and help you maybe release some of the difficulties that you're having would be through breath work. This sustains the soul and it gives life energy to it. So when I tell you to meditate, and I know I say this over and over and over again, but when I tell you to meditate, when I tell you to breathe deep, every time we're trying to give the soul the nourishment it needs and the energy it needs to do the work that we're about to proceed with. When I ask you to do your timeline and to examine your physical journey on this planet, and I'm not talking about past life yet, I'm just talking about the present life, and I'm asking you to really go deep and cure your wounds that you've been carrying with you, I am saying this because you need to heal what's holding you back, either mentally, emotionally, spiritually, or physically. You need to be able, before, you know, this is the airline kind of thing, right? Before you put the mask on that person sitting next to you, secure your own mask and then start helping others. We can proceed together, everyone at their own pace, but we need to be aware of the personal work that is required of us. We no longer can give our power away to everybody else. We can't expect others to pray for us and fix us. We can't expect others to take care of us. We need to do that. If a change is required, you need to determine what that change is going to be and do it. Do it because as you do them, not because you have to or you're obliged to or someone is telling you to, but because it's for your own good. Now, why is it so hard to do that? Why do people have such a hard time? They'll do it for other people, but they won't do it for themselves because they don't love themselves enough. The entire first part of the Gospel of Mary is on love and compassion. So I would say that for your soul ascending, there's a pre-step and it's to love yourself so that you recognize that you are worthy of doing the soul ascension. And as you're working on that step, because it's a working step, right? It's not something that happens necessarily overnight. Although, you know, as you work, you might all of a sudden have some bumps that occur, and you will all of a sudden feel lifted and you'll feel change. For a while, you know, you might be just having a hard time making your way because it's going to be one step at a time. Some friends of mine, I've been doing some self-work and they're like, oh, I'm so tired of doing this. It's the same stuff all the time and I don't see the change. It's because you're mentally doing the work, but you're not applying anything that you're learning to your everyday life and your material life or in your emotional life. You're keeping, the mental is all there. So you have all of the knowledge, but you're not letting it transcend into your actions, into your thoughts, and into your words. And so, knowledge is not enough. Action, transformation are the key. Now, once you're able to release your physical body or your attachment to your physical body, once you learn to love yourself, you have to take care of the next thing. And you'll see they're very closely intertwined because they work together, right? You have to let go of your desires. Because most of us are slaves to our desire, right? We desire more food, we desire more wine, we desire more sex, more contact, more money, more relationship. We want something. Now, this is different than needing something. You want something. This has been a long, long, long time coming, right? I'm sure you guys are going to go, yeah, she said this before. Stop watching TV and you'll realize you won't want so much food late at night because you won't see the ads of food late at night. you are obsessing about your weight because you're looking at all these magazines of all these skinny people that are telling you that's what you should look like to be beautiful. But what you don't know is that the photos have been photoshopped, or the people on there are not 25 or 30, they're 14 and 15 and haven't gone through puberty yet. Never mind having had children and gone through menopause. We need to see real women and appreciate their beauty. But to appreciate beauty, we need to recognize it in ourselves. I know a woman whose head, long hair, is all white, like Snow White. And I find this woman absolutely beautiful. But I realize it's got nothing to do with her hair color or if she's got wrinkles, because I don't see any of that. What do I see when I look at this woman? I see her sparkling eyes. I see her bright smile. And I see the way she greets me when she sees me. And the way she introduces me the second she has a chance. And so we met completely out of our regular meeting place. And I know this woman because the white hair is so unique. And I'm like, but where do I know her from? But outside of her uniform, I didn't recognize her. And then I realized that this woman is beautiful because her soul is beautiful. Because of the way she shines. This bright light that she is what's beautiful. So basically, her physical appearance doesn't matter anymore. Because as I'm looking into her eyes, I'm looking at her soul. And her soul is beautiful. Her soul is shining. We need to free ourselves from those desires. You know, some of you know that I have a very, 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 very strict diet. And one of those things is that as I'm eating the same thing almost every day, it freed me in a way from the desire of something. This is what I'm eating, and there's my body is no longer arguing with me. That's what we're eating. That's all we're having. And so I don't have cravings. I don't have, I'm not overcome with having to eat something. I don't have a relationship. I've been single for many years. But I understand, especially recently when I did my to-do list for 2021, that there's no time for me for a relationship. And it would be unfair to have someone in my life at this point in time and pointing them on the back burner and saying, don't have time for you right now. This is really important. I gotta do this. So until I find a partner like Jesus and Mary did, I have to put these desires aside because my soul is doing some work and this work is really important. If you examine every area of your life and what is it you desire? So first off, I'd suggest that you make a list. What is it you desire? What is it that you want? And then ask yourself, why don't I have it? Or do I already have it and I'm just being greedy and I want more? Or do I really truly need it? I want it, but why do I want it? Because the ad on TV said I should have it? Or, so I had furniture for the same furniture for 25 years. When I change furniture, it's because I sit on it and it breaks. releasing your materialistic need to prove to anyone anything is going to free you. If people come to see you and they love you and they appreciate you, they'll sit on the cushion. It doesn't matter if it's on the ground. And I've known people like that, and we kept going even though we had to sit on the ground. It didn't matter. Because we really wanted to see that particular person and to be with them and spend time with them. So the desire makes you, the soul, the slave of your body. So you have to overcome your attachment and desire of the flesh and to return to your natural state, which is the soul. The spiritual being that you are. Okay. Now, the third one is ignorance. Remember, there's the spiritual body. This was the physical body. And now we're going into the mental body. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is just a one-way ticket for reincarnation over and over and over again. Christmas was just a little while ago, and I was watching Scrooge. And Charles Dickens was a brilliant man. He was a man who suffered when he was a child, who was poor. He'd known poverty. He understood living in the material world. And he says, beware of ignorance and fear. Which is really, really interesting, because fear is our own way to binding ourselves. I'm not saying that, you know, go trying jumping off a bridge and see if you'll survive. But sometimes we're afraid to tell someone how we feel. We're afraid to stand up for ourselves and let someone know that what they're doing is not okay. Sometimes we're afraid, what could we be afraid of? We're afraid to go on a trip. Well, outside of COVID times, please. But we're afraid of trying new things. We're afraid of maybe leaving a high-paying job and doing something that you're really passionate about. I know that fear. It took me 5 years to get over that fear. But once I took the first step and I engaged and I went into that, then I realized, why did I wait so long? Well, I waited because I was afraid, because I didn't trust, because I didn't have enough faith, because. So if you have fears blocking you, you need to examine what is preventing you from moving forward. What is stopping you from achieving what it is you really, truly want to achieve? Now, is it to be rich? Is it to be popular? Or is it to be loved? What is it that you really need to achieve? And then stop being ignorant about it. Ask yourself, how can I do this? Which is the difference between, you know, not going off a bridge to jump just to see how that feels, but, you know, going, okay, want to experience a sense of weightlessness? Well, you can go into this parachuting area and just float over the air and experience that safely. Right? And so there's no need to be afraid. We've removed the fear out of the equation and we've done what we wanted to do safely. And the same thing happens with the spiritual work, right? I always want to give you a very physical example, and everybody goes, well, of course, no one's going to jump off a bridge, but oh yeah, that's a nice idea. You can take it a little further. You know, want to add a little bit of an adrenaline. You go parachuting or you go bungee jumping or whatever. But spiritually, it's the same thing. You can't be ignorant anymore. You need to know the laws of the universe. You need to know the laws of reincarnation. You need to know the laws of karma, which is what the souls are living by. It doesn't matter that there's human laws. There's more important laws. I'm not saying don't obey the physical laws. You have to. But what I'm saying is that there are more that you need to learn and be aware of in order to be successful. So, ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is a prison. So, ignorance is encouraged by those who want to control you, use their power to manipulate you. Knowledge is real power. Then you can decide for yourself if you want to believe what the people are saying to you, and if that really is the best thing for you to do. And I'm talking the spiritual context. There are certain things that you like it or not right now. You have to wear a mask. You have to wash your hands. And I'm not saying you shouldn't obey those. But I'm saying if for you, you require time to meditate, then you must make this a rule. It must be something that is respected, just like the other things. You know, like when we start living together and then we start having children and then we start having rules because that no longer functions, right? For example, when they're little, you take their dish to the sink and then eventually you're looking around going, okay, well, you're old enough, grab your plate and take it out to the sink. And they're like, wait, that's not the way it's been forever. Right, but now you're older, you're wiser, and you're capable of actually bringing your plate, so do so. This is, if you're watching, you've reached a point in your life where it is time for you to take some responsibility and actions towards releasing your soul. And so you must be informed, and you must then not just gather knowledge and say, oh, well, that was interesting, and she wore pretty makeup today. No, this is about, okay, so what did she say? How does this apply to me? How can I do this? And I was looking at all my books today, preparing for next week's podcast, and the piles of books I've read, it just amazed me today for some reason. And it echoed in my head, people complaining, oh, but, you know, I've been working on myself for so long and so many years. And I'm thinking, I have been doing this since I was 15. So that's a few decades. And I still enjoy bringing this to you guys. I still love the fact that I can bring it together and put it into this magnificent little ball and make it shine for you. And while I do so, it reminds me, not just you, of the things that I must do and things I must remember. So it doesn't matter how many years I've been on this journey. I need to remain on the right path, on this right journey. And so anything that will help me stay here, I don't consider it work. I just consider it continuing my journey. So perhaps that's what you need to do. Some of you need to start, instead of calling it work, you need to call it a journey, an adventure. And you just haven't reached the end of it yet, because the end of the journey is ascending as a master. So if any of you are ascending as masters, please let me know. It'd be awesome to know ascended masters personally. But for the rest of us, we should journey together and help each other and support each other. The worst kind of ignorance is not to know yourself. So remember when we said you have to love yourself? And you start, there's introspection here that needs to happen. You need to look at yourself for who you are. What is it you don't like? What is it you can change? And then the serenity prayer comes into play. If there's something you can't change, you can't change. You might have to learn to accept it and learn to love it. And then you have to ask yourself, how did I become this way? And then you might realize, well, you know, I got stretched belly skin, but gave birth to 3 children. So I don't look like the model on the poster or in a magazine or the movie, but she doesn't have my 3 kids, right? So my journey that transformed my body, that transformed my mind, that transformed my spiritual journey, all brought me beautiful gifts. One of the exercises we did on January 31st was to look at the worst day for 2020. And for me, it was to lose my dog. It was her chattering. But to overcome this pain, I went into gratitude about what this dog brought me for 17 years. And it didn't vanish all pain, because I can't hold her and I can't touch her. But I was grateful, and that helped me then accept that all things come to an end, and it's our time. It would have been selfish of me. It would have been a desire of mine, an attachment of mine, to keep her alive longer when she was suffering. And so letting her go was an act of love and compassion. Know yourself. Know who you are. Know what you need to work on. Don't hide anymore. Some people are... I personally did the AA for adult children of dysfunctional families. I recommend it to anyone. There's multiple AA programs out there that are assisting people in their introspection, in learning about themselves and how they can grow and how they can overcome the blockages that prevents them from looking and doing that introspecting. That you choose to work with us with the workshops that we do, or that you choose to attend an AA meeting, or that you just follow the simple guidance that Mary Magdalene teaches us, the importance is that don't stay ignorant and don't be afraid to really know what's going on. So the fourth element, although you'll see some of the things do kind of repeat, just were a little bit confusing, but some of the pages were missing in the manuscripts that were found. She says there's a fourth element, which is the 7 powers of wrath. Here they bring out darkness. Darkness is the fear. So the fear of the unknown, the fear of not knowing what's going to happen next. And the way to beat the darkness is to be in the moment in the light. I have people who suffer from very great anxiety. And I ask them, okay, so you're worried about something that might happen tomorrow. Right. But how do you feel today? How do you feel right now? Well, right now I'm fine. Okay. Acknowledge that right now you're fine. They're like, yes, well, right now I'm fine. But I said, no, but right now, in this moment, you are fine. Now, what is it that grows concern in you? And they'll say, well, I have a meeting, I have an exam. I said, okay, so then let's go over the things that you can do right now to make this incident a positive one. What do we need to prepare? What do we need to do to make you be comfortable in this new situation or this situation that you've faced before and experience difficulty? So get out of the darkness, get out of the shadow. It means, you know, being able to be in the full light. What happens when you're in the full light? People can see everything about you. There's no more hiding. And so leaving the darkness, leaving that element behind, is to become full of light. So how can you fill yourself with light? How can you become a joyful being, a happy being, a grateful being? Meditation is a great key. Feeding, every time you do deep breath work, imagine you're inhaling like pixie dust of gold, fluttering light. And that's what becomes you. You become light. You become lighter, and you weigh less, and your worries is less. So, and she repeats here desire and ignorance again, but I covered them really well before, so I'm just going to keep going. The next thing that we need to free ourselves for the soul to ascend is the fear of death. You must release your fear of death because there is no death. The soul doesn't die. She again talks about you're only shedding the garment of your soul, which is this body and this life form and this time and space. Your soul lives outside of time and space. Your soul is eternal. And your soul evolves outside of this linear time that us humans have created. There's none of that in that dimension. And so the second you become soul again, there's no fear because you know you're eternal. But to live in the here and now with the fear of death is preventing you from moving forward. So that's one of the things that you need to free yourself for your soul to ascend. The next thing you have to beat is the power of the kingdom of the flesh. Now, like I said before, you have a body and you want to satisfy urges that are typically related to your physical body. They have nothing to do with you actually living. I'm not using the word surviving here. I'm using the word living, right? So if you can eat, and if you can drink clean water, if you can sleep, it doesn't matter if it's on a $3,000 mattress or you're on the floor. If you can actually sleep, then you're sleeping. So what does our physical body actually needs to keep functioning is food, water, and rest. Everything else is an extra. Everything else is attached to either a desire or a satisfaction of your flesh. And now you're going to say, but life will be so boring, Sonia. No, it won't be. If you're not a prisoner of it. I have a piece of chocolate, but I'm not lusting for it. I'm not craving it. I'm not going to kill someone to get a piece of chocolate. I'll just have a piece of chocolate because I can have a piece of chocolate. And that tells my body, see, you got chocolate, everything's fine. I have one square of dark chocolate. There's a difference between satisfying the flesh through touch, alcohol, drugs, sugar, caffeine, and all these other things, and actually satisfying its needs. If you remove all these excessive things, these excessive behavior, and you just treat your body as a temple. Now think about it. There you go. That's a great example. If you look at a temple, there's a roof, there's walls, and there's a courtyard. What does it need? Well, you need to make sure that the roof is solid so that it doesn't cave in, that the walls are solid, and that if they're in need of paint or repair, you fix it up. So this would be washing your body, this would be feeding your body, this would be, you know, going to the washroom. And then there's the courtyard, which, you know, well-manicured temple would be nice, so we can pick up the dead leaves. And so it doesn't mean that you can never go to the spa. But if this becomes a need and a desire of the flesh, then you are being controlled. You don't have to go to the spa. But if you have an opportunity to try the spa, then that's, you see the difference? I'm seeing some of you nod, so this is good. Don't be a slave to it. Take care of your body. Your body needs to be taken care of. Do it so lovingly. You don't need to be Spartan about it. You don't have to starve yourself. I certainly don't starve myself. But I also don't overindulge in things. I know when I can say, this is all I need. Now, if my physical body says I'm still hungry, then I ask myself, what is it that needs to be filled? Because your physical body is all that, for some of you, can feel. So you're not feeling that it's your mind that wants to be filled, or it's your spiritual body that needs air. So before try this, okay, let's do this. Before going for the bag of chips or the snacks or the ice cream or whatever, I want you to sit quietly and breathe for about 2 minutes. Okay, so we're not talking, I did my 3 breaths, I still want to have something. 2 minutes of deep breathing. Inhale. Exhale. And then I'm almost 99% sure you won't crave anything. Yes, your body was craving something, but it wasn't food. It was soul food it needed, not actual food. Okay. Then comes the sixth power of wrath, which is foolish wisdom. Now, what would that look like? How could we define that? It can be you know better and you don't apply it, what you learn, what you know. Okay, so that's foolish wisdom, because you know, but you're not applying it. Another way is to keep taking classes, but, you know, just to put diplomas on your wall or having certificates and whatever else, saying, well, look, I'm intelligent. Look, it's all there on the wall, but you're not doing anything with it. So you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, and you're not achieving anything. Another foolish with them would be to try guiding others and trying to guide others to take their power away, making them dependent on you. So now you understand, dear students, why I don't always give you the answer. Why I tell you, no, you have to do this by yourself. No, you have to find the answer. I can't give you this, because this would be foolish. Perhaps, if you work harder or hard enough, then you will be able to stick with it or apply it better, because it's been harder for you to find that answer. It's been harder for you to connect. And so because of that, you're going to be ready to actually apply it. So taking someone's power away is the worst thing we can do for them. Empowering them, giving them the tools, that's much better. And then finally, self-righteous materialism or wrathful wisdom. This relates to acquiring wealth beyond what we need. I have things, but I don't care for any of them. If I have things and someone really likes them and I think that they'll get some use out of them, I'll just give it away, because the universe keeps sending it back to me. I'm not fearful that there won't be enough money, because I believe the universe is supporting me. Again, it's another fear, right? Accumulating things more than what you need because you're afraid that you're not going to have any. And you're having something, and because you're hoarding it, someone else doesn't have it. And I'm not just talking about every regular person here. This is a larger scale of society. Why is 2% of the population mostly have all the money in the world and the rest of us has to struggle? There's enough resources. There's enough wealth to go around so that we could all be equal. We could all be warm in the winter. We could all be cool in the summer. We could all have our 3 meals a day. We could all have clothes to wear that don't have to be tattered, that don't have to be in the rags. We could all have clean water to drink. This is where the sense of community comes in. This is where the participation, even if it's just you giving some hours to an organization or volunteering, helping others, there's always a place and there's always a need. And so don't be so concerned about accumulating things that you don't need. Just take what you need and leave the rest behind. And if you look around and if you find things that don't fit your suit your lifestyle anymore, then give it away, sell it away. I don't know, but make space. Clear the clutter around you. Clear the space so that you can breathe. And then Mary's soul ascended, and she said, "That which bound me has been slain." Okay, so the things that were holding her back are no longer. "That which enveloped me has vanished." As the soul is ascending, the physical body is no longer important. My desires are no more. So it's not about desires or the flesh. It's about the soul. And the soul doesn't have desires, per se, as I explained. "And I have overcome the fetters of ignorance." And her soul ascending into this light was the soul being liberated from the 7 demons. As she ascended, she became the soul again. This soul is called Lady Nada. Right, this is very important because Mary Magdalene was one incarnation of the soul called Lady Nada. Just like Jesus' incarnation was just one incarnation of the soul called Lord Sananda. Alright, so Lady Nada is the ascended master who looks after the 6 sacred flames of ministration, service, peace, and true brotherhood. She works hand in hand with her twin flame, Lord Sananda, which is one of those incarnations was Jesus. She has powerful healing abilities, and her symbol is a pink rose. So, you know how you find a feather in the street, and that means there's an angel looking over you? Well, if you start seeing pink rose everywhere, it's Mary Magdalene saying she's there for you. Why would you call unto Lady Nada? Why would you ask for her help? In outside of the teachings that she gave us. Well, first of all, you can ask her to come and help you understand the teachings of tonight. She was fabulous with me yesterday. She made everything clear. It was one of the easiest podcasts to prepare. It was absolutely fantastic. So I'm grateful to her for her help and assistance. She's got powerful healing abilities. So if you're trying to heal either an emotional, physical, mental, or spiritual wound, ask for her help. Ask for her guidance. She will come to you in a vision. She will assist you. She is one of the 8 members of the karmic board. yeah. And so therefore, she will be able to help you balance your karma. And she wants me to remind you of the importance of love and service. Interestingly enough, one of the flames that Lady Nada takes care of is the pink flame. So she takes care of the pink flame, her symbol is a pink rose. So if you see a lot of the pink, it's also her manifesting your presence in your life. So there's many different books that I've used in tonight's podcast. The Nag Hammadi Library, compiled by James Robinson. The Secret Teachings of Mary Magdalene by Claire Namad and Margaret Bailey. And the Magdalena Manuscript by Tom Kenyon and Judy Sion. amongst the other ones that I've listed before. And so This brings us to the end.